So, good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everybody in HarryMedia.net land. Today, it's been a very interesting experience for me today trying to figure out what to talk about. Now, the funny thing is that as soon as I try to figure out what I'm supposed to talk about, immediately I have come on the platform of creating topics with the mind. In other words, the thought process, the mental processes, the processes which have to deal with more or less creations that are to a certain extent unnatural. Now, when I think about what to talk about, I have a very hard time figuring it out. When I just simply speak from the heart, when I simply share my experiences, how I feel, it becomes much easier for me to speak on this Saturday morning. Now, I find that interesting. I find that interesting because it actually contradicts the usual way in which communications go on, especially communications which are based in an educational format or a format where somebody is attempting to bring the audience to some other point to assist the audience to develop their understanding. Usually in those formats, the duty of the speaker is to have already figured out exactly what he or she is going to speak about, to have it organized in fashions that make sense, to know in advance the specific topics or points of interest which must be discussed. Now, I can do that. I have done that. Yet, usually the topics are not all covered. My plan, which I have made in advance, doesn't really work. Things are not the way I plan them. Topics usually move in other directions than the expected ones. So then sometimes I think, why should I bother doing that? Will it actually make a difference? Will I be able to improve what I do by very carefully outlining it before I do it? I've come to the conclusion that when we plan things in advance, there are many mental processes involved. There's a lot of analysis, a lot of planning. And this can be counterproductive to our expression, our desire to express, and what it really is we want to communicate with others. Now, that, according to the intellectual, analytical mind, is contradictory. After all, how could planning and perfecting your presentation, which is, after all, meant for the sake of others, be in any way an interference for the audience? How could it be detrimental for that which the audience requires or that which would be beneficial to the audience? Now, I think the reason why my understanding of speaking as not being a process of the mind is correct, the reason why it's correct, is because I feel that what it is I'm particularly doing is not a process of the mind. And I think that's the whole key to understanding this dilemma. And even better, it's the whole key to understanding me. Now, I know that men in general, rational people in general, people who have a lot of left brain activity, people who do a lot of technical things, and obviously I do a lot of technical things. Such people are mainly rational. They mainly understand things in terms which could be considered to be a mathematical type of construction. Even if it's with words, there are relations between these words, relations between the concepts, which assume the methodology of formulas and formulation. So these particular forms and formats are, without a doubt, very rational things. They're not necessarily based in intuitiveness at all. Yet, at the same time, we find that in my particular life, a lot of what I do is not rational in that sense. It's based on feeling. It's based on my mood. It's based on, sorry, somebody's sending me insane screen resolution. It's based on the way in which I feel best in a certain environment. I'd like to use the example of music because we were playing music before that were recordings from Kamala Mulla's video camera. Not very good because of the small microphone involved. But recordings which represented our mood as musicians live, which were expressions of our spontaneous, irrational musical expression, which just simply manifested simply because we felt it. Now, I know that music is to a very large extent based in rationality. All music is based on mathematics. Mathematics and music are very intimately related. There's absolutely no doubt about that. This has been proven by various scholars. Bach was the first one who proved this by making the well-tempered clavichord, which allowed all instruments to find a compatible tuning, because previous to this, they couldn't play together. Now, music is based in keys. It's based in tonality. It's based in the expression of compatible forms of rhythm, meter, of making statements, having those motifs repeat or fit within certain groupings and phrasings. So those who compose, those who play, have to have a great training, a great discipline, to understand what they're doing, to understand what can be done, what cannot be done, especially when it's done spontaneously, especially when it's done live. There's a certain responsibility one has to do it properly. Otherwise, the audience becomes very upset. The audience says, no, that's not right. That's not very good. So in music, there must be this rationality. Now, I must admit, sure, I was trained in all that stuff. I mean, I took classical piano up through the fifth year of study. I, in the university, took courses in harmony and syncopation and music history and so on. Now, if I try to play something in this rational fashion, I cannot play. It's something I've discovered about myself which drives me crazy. If you give me a song and you say there are these chords, or these, here are these notes, and you have to fit within this, I fall apart totally. Therefore, I have a very hard time playing with a lot of musicians. If I'm playing with musicians where the demand upon me is to play in very specific formats with expectations of a kind of a virtuosity which would demand practically my concentration as if I was in an orchestra. I fall apart totally. I can't even play the simplest things with such persons. And I end up thinking, I am the absolute worst musician in the history of the world. I should never pick up another instrument as long as I live. There is no hope for me. What I play is childish. And it's true in that context. And then there's the context where the mind takes a back seat. There's the concept where a key, of course, is required just to have sanity. But everything else, except for meter, rhythm. And in my case, rhythm can be anything because I can adapt to all kinds of rhythms. I'm a very rhythmic person because it's feeling rhythm. I remember once I was making music with a friend of mine who's an incredibly educated composer. He can just listen to music and score it instantly. He's that good. We've made music together. And once he made I made with him some kind of very strange introduction where the beat was in a very strange place and what he was playing was being offset by that beat in a very strange way. He made some music and I offset it with a beat which was very strange and stretched it a little bit. And we were trying to fit it within the normal MIDI patterns on the computer. In other words, it had to fit within certain bars and certain measures. And the difficulty in doing that is mathematically, you have to choose the exact time signature. Otherwise, it will not work. So here he was, this expert. I just walked out of the room and for a while let him play with it. He couldn't figure it out. And I had no mathematical way to figure it out. But I just felt it was something very weird. So I just put this very weird time signature in. And it was instantly correct. And he started thinking of me as this great mathematical genius. And I tried to explain that, no, I just guessed. It just felt to be like that. So there is this kind of a contradiction between the rational and irrational. People could say irrationality has no logic to it. Sometimes they call this irrational kind of a thing a very feminine quality. And they say that females, when they're being very female, are not rational. They're very irrational. That there's like no reason to what they do or why they do it. Now, in my less experienced days, I may have thought that too. I may have also thought that actually ladies can be very irrational. But actually, within that system of irrationality, there are very logical, or let me put it like this, within that illogical framework, things are not only logical, but they are predictable. Reactions are predictable. Now, I mean, I know this is strange, but if you think about it, irrationality really means there's no logic. And because there's no logic, you can't predict it. That's basically what irrational means. It means there's no logic to it. There's no reason to it. You can't predict it. For example, irrational music would be something you couldn't listen to. It would more or less be like the chaos that you could create by just throwing cans down a stair. Therefore, we think in terms of irrationality as being chaos, as being something you can't depend on. something that you cannot relate to, something which is a disturbance because you can't count on it. Just like in music, when you're playing with others, you have to count on them maintaining a relationship between what they just played and what they'll play next. Because unless this relationship is maintained, there can be no continuity to the music. And music without continuity is insanity. Now, one would think that when you deal with irrationality, that it's a dangerous thing. Therefore, a lot of people say about women, we can't understand them at all. They make no sense to us. They're irrational. They are another species. They work in another way. Now, let's talk about nature. Nature, we say Mother Nature. We say Mother Nature because Mother Nature gives birth to all things in this world, nourishes all things, all living beings, nourishes everything everywhere, is the support of everything everywhere. Now, in Mother Nature, there are many things which a very rational person may consider to be irrational, as being chaotic. For example, when the rain is falling like mad and it's making these strikes on the ground, you can see these little hits of the raindrops. They don't seem to make any kind of pattern. Therefore, we call it random. It's randomly happening. Now, it's a very interesting thing that we would think less of a random event. We would consider it to be not as important as a planned event. Would we be happier if the rain fell every other millimeter? Would you be happy if the rain fell consistently in a net pattern of every other millimeter? Just think about that. If it always fell like that, well, then all things everywhere would have gradually these holes bored into them. Because water is the universal solvent. So you'd have this all over the world, this pockmarked effect where rain fell very perfectly in the same place. Now, nobody would like that. We would think it's insanity. We would find it to be something which is intolerable. So, in reality, the fact that rain is, quote-unquote, random, is a very good thing. Because it spreads out evenly the effect of the water. It doesn't allow the water from the rain to just always fall in the same place and wear things out. Now, in that sense, irrationality is a very good thing. In that sense, irrationality protects us. But is that really irrational? Is that really illogical? Is that randomness in a chaotic sense? Even forgetting for a moment the manner in which scientists, we've spoken about this before, have seen that over broader areas, when you look far enough away, there is order even in the rain. There are wave patterns that make sense. There are larger waves that manifest from these little pitter-pats of the rain. But even putting that aside, the if somebody were to create rain and were to decide that it should be not a similar pattern in small scales to protect us, we would consider that very intelligent. We don't think like that. We don't see things in a holistic fashion, in a bigger fashion. We examine things in very small samples because that's all we can do. In fact, the whole digital world is made up of very small samples. In fact, the smaller the sample, the higher the quality, the higher the resolution of what you're listening to or seeing. The more samples you make of a room full of people, the better the picture is. The more samples of a sound, the better the sound is. So our rational minds have created this kind of a mood where the greater the itsy bitsy teeny weeny little samples of reality, the better it is. But at the same time, this same very rational mind realizes, if I have big enough computers and I take so many very small samples, but then I zoom out my perspective and see those very, very, very small samples as part of a very big picture, which now I see in front of me in a smaller format, I now see patterns in it which I would have never seen before. Think about the subatomic level. You know, we understand we are made of atoms, molecules, of course, because we are in form. It must have a molecular form for us to be able to deal with it. And molecules are made of atoms. And atoms are made of electrons, neutrons, protons. And even in a smaller level, we have subatomic particles like quarks and neutrinos and all these really fabulous things. And when you take our form, our image, and you go down into the smallest, 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 smallest samples on the subatomic level, you find a whole universe of particles moving in what you would absolutely guarantee to be chaos, randomness, with absolutely no discernible form. You cannot figure out the pattern. It seems to be totally irrational. Can you imagine if they develop someday the methodology to sample an atom's worth of subatomic particles, to sample it with extremely great resolution, and then to move from the random, from the smallest particle outwards up to the point where it assembles an atom? You would be able to see, perhaps, the way in which that randomness develops the fundamental form of all existence, the atom. Or maybe as it becomes an electron. So, if you think about it, we have this basis of all existence is this total irrationality. Could we then say the basis of all existence is the feminine energy? That total subatomic, irrational chaos is the mother of all form? It is the mother of all growth and sustenance? Let's go back to nature. if you look at things within the way the air moves, or the way water moves, or even the way water is, you will find it does not follow the laws of logic. Because it was so, because there were so many fires here, many people were doing prayer, people were doing yajnas, and Sati sent me a lot of movies about water. So all these movies came over about water, because water is what was required to counteract the fire. And in one of these movies, it was about water, I just learned some fantastic things about this incredible substance. That water is illogical. Water is the basis of all living existence. And it's completely illogical. First of all, it defies physical laws in the sense that it's the only element that can exist in three states. It can be a liquid, it can be a solid, it can be a gas. Nothing else but water can be in three states. The amount of water that was there in the beginning of existence is still the same amount of water now. It only transfers from one state to the other. Now, the thing that I thought was the best of all in this movie about water was that water changes according to your consciousness. If you even say thank you, and mean it, of course, with intention, to a glass of water, the structure of the water transforms. It develops a very beautiful crystalline form. Water absorbs our intentions. It absorbs our thoughts. It absorbs our emotions. If you are sending love to water, the water absorbs that. If you are sending hatred to water, the water absorbs that. This was proven in various scientific studies that were explained by Nobel Prize winners, no less, in this movie. Now, they showed that when people put love in water, it had a certain structure. They were showing images of the structure. When people put hatred in the water, it had a totally different structure. You could see the structure of water was beautiful. It was whole when it had love in it. And when it had hatred in it, the structure of water was torn. It was distorted. Now, I'm not going to get into the very many details of this film. It's called Water. Actually, it's a Russian film, so it's called Vada. But I want to take this a step back. The most essential of all elements that is the reason we live, because without water for a few days, we die. But the reason of this unique power of water is that it's the basis of all life. And it is affected by emotion, it's affected by intention, it's infected by contamination. And if you think about this, follow this with me. It's a rather irrational substance. It doesn't follow scientific logic. It's unique in its structure, the way it works, its three states. And you can, with your mind and intention, change its structure. It'll always be H2O, but its structure will transform. That's illogical. That's illogical. Now let's talk about that. I am mainly water. My brain is mainly water. Water is everywhere in me. Astrologically, those who are in water signs are very sensitive. There are those who are in earth signs. There are those who are in air signs. There are those who are in fire signs. And there are those who are in water signs. People in water signs are always very sensitive. Hello? Water is sensitive. Water absorbs. Therefore, water is aware of thought, emotion, intention. Now, let's talk about all people, all living beings which have water in them. We are all affected through the medium of the water in our bodies. Water is the medium through which our sensitivity flows. And those who are of water signs have even more of that sensitivity. Now, that means our brains, which are mainly water, when we have negative emotions placed upon us, when we have negative energy placed upon us, it affects our brains. It affects our bodies. Now, that's not only because somebody put hatred into water. It can also be that we disrespect water so much, we fill it with fertilizer waste, chemical waste from factory runoffs. We fill it with acid that comes from the rain, from factory chimneys and exhausts. We fill it with every form of contaminant by washing dirty things, washing things which are rotten. What to speak of oil spills. You name it, we are expert at polluting water. Now, here's another really irrational thing about water. If you purify it, it doesn't change the structure. You can take out the oil, you can take out the parasites, you can take out the debris, you can take out all this junk. But the structure of this very irrational element never changes. It carries the structure still. So recycling water and sending it back into the systems of the people is making it so that water is this massive storehouse of all that has ever happened to it since the beginning of time. I hope that sank in. Water is the universal memory. Its structure is affected by all that has ever passed through it or over it or under it or in it. And that water flows in us. And that water affects our brain. And our bodies and our brains affect our minds, affect our hormonal activities. Okay, when I say hormones, everybody thinks that's, well, that's more of a female thing. After all, that the females, they have these hormonal things. And when the hormones shift, they become more irrational. But that's actually not irrational. That's very logical. A hormone shifts, a physiological biochemical change takes place, and a manifestation of it appears. That's not illogical. That's not irrational. It's very scientific. And believe it or not, men are just as affected by hormonal difficulties. It's just that they don't talk about it like women do. They don't express it. They keep it within themselves. And that eats them out from inside. But all of us are affected because our brains are affected. And the way our bodies react are affected. And it's all based, ultimately, in the way this water is affecting us and the way we have affected water. So my conclusion is everything is based upon the feminine energy. This water fits perfectly as the mother of all things. It is the mother of life in the universe. Babies live within the fluids of the womb, which are covered with the water. And all energies are flowing through that fluid. Ultimately, this form of understanding will give us a greater respect for these things which we have labeled as irrational, as illogical, and therefore less. Because we are just not intelligent enough to understand how these things are the basis of all existence. Back to music. You see, my lectures are very illogical in many respects, but if you listen to them, you'll see that I bounce back and forth between topics, but it's in a very kind of organized fashion that one topic leads to another, which proves another, which demonstrates another. And I didn't plan it that way. It's just that my mind thinks in a very big way. It's a very kind of holistic mind. I'm not a details guy. I think more from the larger point of view. And as I describe what I see in this point of view, I'm describing details. If you're hearing it from the point of view of this concept, this detail, that detail, and you're not keeping track of all these points and how they relate, you will think, this guy is bouncing all over the place. He is irrational in many respects. If you understand that I'm talking about something that I see, which is a big picture, and my explanation is bouncing around because I'm explaining parts of the big picture which have importance to me, you will understand that you have to be a little patient. It's kind of like when you listen to German. I know that Germans are very patient in discussions. And most people don't really understand the reason for that. They think it's just because they're German. But actually, I figured out that the reasons why Germans listen so patiently is because often the verb is at the end of the sentence. So they know that they have to be prepared to listen perhaps to a very big sentence before they finally get to the verb. So they hold their judgment of what has been said until the end of the sentence. And that makes them seem to be very polite. That makes it seem that they are very good listeners. And indeed they are, because their language forces them to be. Of course, sometimes if they're passionate, they won't wait for the verb because they already think they know what it's coming. And not in every sentence is it so that the verb is at the end of the sentence. But it might be, so you have to just learn to be patient. So patience is a very important thing, especially when you are a mother. Think about mothers. Here you are, this little baby. You see, I'm bouncing around again. The reason I'm doing it is because my whole theme has become explaining about this wonderful irrationality that's not irrational at all. My theme is about this wonderful femininity, which is the basis of all existence, which is not only logical, but it's the building block of everything. Like this chaos in the subatomic level. Like this water, which is everywhere. Like this feeling or this picture of the essence of what we are, the soul's awareness and consciousness, which can therefore, in this big picture, manifest in a physical form, manifest as a bunch of details, manifest as a sequence of lives that work together in a big picture as part of my evolution. So I'm seeing that, and I'm just talking about it. And therefore we bounce from this part of the picture to that part of the picture. But you have to be patient if you want to see the picture that I see, at least according to the way I try to describe it, which means that my capacity to describe it as I see it is directly related to what I feel or what the audience actually sees or sees according to their own perspective. And therefore, I have a great responsibility to do it properly. Therefore, you'll understand why I'm doing what I'm doing. Sure, it could probably be done better. Sure, if I made a great plan to describe what I see, I suppose I could do it better. I could even write a book, and it could be very organized. But the process of writing the book, the process of taking that image and breaking it down into a logical presentation will destroy my capacity to see it. It will destroy my capacity to express it. Therefore, I can't play music in a traditionally structured way. I can only play music I feel with others who feel it in a compatible enough way so that we can play together and expand our feeling of the music. If I have to think like I'm playing guitar, that here I am on the fifth above the root of this particular key, and it would be fun to play from the fifth to the third to the second to the seventh to a diminished ninth, I won't be able to play. Okay, tell them if I had to do it very logically and rationally, I wouldn't be able to perform. I wouldn't be able to make a phrase. Because then I would have to see the fretboard of the guitar as a series of notes. I would have to see the fretboard of the guitar as having mathematical correlations, and I would have to think. I can't do that. When I'm playing, I can't think. As soon as I think, I'm lost. I see it when I'm playing. If I all of a sudden become not connected with the music and my mind thinks, I start playing in a different key, I get lost. And so long as I'm totally in the feeling, I never think about notes. I never think about keys. I never think about the mathematical relations of harmony. I see the phrasing as a feeling. And I move my fingers in irrational ways because it feels like I should do it. And that feeling propels the feeling of the music. Just consider the great energy which is all around us in the universe. If the universe had to keep track of every mathematical relationship, every physical relationship of everything, it would have to keep track of an enormous amount of information. And when you have to keep track of an enormous amount of information, the consciousness becomes very cold. It becomes mechanistic. It becomes a data bank. Every programmer knows that mainly when you work for others in businesses, you're making data banks. You are creating ways to collect data, to record data, to process data, to spit out data in reports, to make charts, to do predictions. And it's generally known amongst programmers that all this data stuff stinks. It's very mechanistic. It's very boring. Of course, nowadays they have modules to take care of this to a large extent. But in my day, basically you had to build everything from scratch every time you programmed. So programmers like to create things which are new and original and are colorful and are interesting and are exciting. They want to use creativity. They don't want to be absorbed in cold data, because data is dead. So from the universal point of view, data is dead. And the energy, the feeling, the intentions, the patterns, the overall picture of the color and mood, this is life. I, as a living being, am filled with color. My energy is flowing. My whole awareness is working in patterns. And I'm reaching out to life, from life, for life. Similarly, the universe is working with us in that way. And those who are in contact with it know how to be compatible with it, know how to feel it. Therefore, I talked about water, because water is the key. Just think about this, you putting a glass of water before you and changing its structure by offering it love, by thanking it. Now, it's not just my opinion. I'm taking this from these researchers. They even brought up examples, especially from Russian history, of this one very highly placed member of the Russian church who was put in prison and given only some bread and rotten water. Water which would ordinarily kill you rapidly. But after many months, he not only did not die, he looked healthier. They could not understand it. So they asked him how it's so. And he said, it's simply because I blessed this water and I filled it with all spiritual intention. He changed that rotten, nasty water into something which was very curative. That is significant. We, as people, can transform our entire lives simply by blessing the water in our body. Simply by blessing the water we drink. By taking the water in our hands and putting in the beautiful energy of love, thanking the water for its being the whole basis of our existence. Simply by doing this one thing, you can create the best medicine in the world. This one thing can transform your whole life. Blessing the water you drink with your purest love and intention and thanks. That means by blessing that beautiful fundamental substance, that substance upon which we are all born. If you think about even the Vedic conception of the causal ocean, It's water. Vishnu's in water. This is something very significant. You can use this mystically. Even you don't know how to heal. Okay, let's say. If you just place your hands around someone who's sick and you bless the water within them, you offer that love and blessing to the water within them, you will become a healer. And you know the way it is etherically. You don't even have to be next to the person. You can even do it through a distance to offer healing by blessing the water in the person. Blessing the water in the food. I mean, this is a fundamentally mystic, outrageously fantastic thing. That just by spiritually loving water, you can transform everything. Now, can you imagine if all of us in this world, or a lot of us in this world, or even just our HarryMedia.net people, and we're going to do this, by the way, were to sit together and offer blessings to all of the oceans of this world, all of the bodies of water, just to thank them for being there. Offer thanks to the water in the sky. Simply offer love to water. We might be able to do something for a world that is in very bad shape. Now, I don't want to be, vague about this, but absolutely for sure, I know that things are not in very good condition right now. And the world is in a very seriously bad shape. And things are getting seriously worse. Yet, it's also a time of enormous transformation. I think this transformation will be fueled not logically, not rationally, not politically, and not economically. These things will be affected as byproducts. But this transformation will be fueled by our developing the proper relationship to this fundamental element and developing it within this huge and immense respect for this feminine energy upon which all existence rests. That's just my 2 cents opinion about this, I think, very essential point. And back to music. When I play, the more I forget where I am, what I'm doing, how I'm doing it, and the more I simply feel, the better it is. And I listen to this guy on some of these tracks playing guitar, and I say, "Now, who is that? That's not me, because I can't play that." I told that to my cousin and he said, "Well, obviously you can, because you did." But that didn't really impress me, because I know I can't. It's kind of like if you go into a trance. Ultimately, what is a trance? If you think about it, a trance is the complete opposite of logic and reason. It's just your total absorption in a particular energetic pattern, so that your whole perception and your whole mechanism of awareness is within that pattern. And if you were to speak describing what you're experiencing without using speech as a logical process, you could express what that trance was. So this is the secret of all mysticism. To not think about it, just be in it. Just experience it. As soon as you think about it, you ruin the experience. So therefore, thought can be a good thing if you need to do something rational, Or it could be a very detrimental thing if you're trying to do something holistic or mystical. And my feeling is that the universe doesn't work as a great storage of data. It rather works as a living organism which is instantaneously responding to the sum totals and detailed totals of the awareness and consciousness of everything within it. And that we can affect it by directed intention. You know, like for instance, if you just send out love, it may not get anywhere. But if you send love to water, it always gets there. Because the water gets it. Interesting. And on this basis, we're going to have a meditation where we're going to simply connect with water, and we're going to just bless it, thank it, and offer it our love and healing, because the water needs that healing. It has become so contaminated, so distorted, so polluted by all things of this world. So I'm going to stop there right now. And when we come back, if there are any questions related to the water thing or the whatever picture I was explaining, I'll deal with them. And we'll do a meditation of water. And again, I'm going to play this very irrational music that is made totally spontaneously by three guys who had no idea what they're doing. And we all talked about it, that we have no idea what we're doing. Okay, some of them are really bad recordings. They were just made on a video camera. But it's just pure feeling music. And it's irrational. So I'm going to start off with this one track called Lost Mind. And the reason why I called it Lost Mind is because there was no mind behind this, for sure. And even though this is like, you know, not usually the kind of music I play between sessions, I think it's kind of interesting because it's exactly what I've been talking about in a musical format. I've received a couple of questions and some comments, some which are good, some which I just answered in the email. But I think this... I have one question here, not a question, a comment here, which I think is very interesting to share. And I sent it to you. I sent it to you, Sudo, you should be able to see it on your messenger. I sent it to you so that you can translate it along with me without having to listen to me. Okay, so here is what he says, Mihail. In common practice, irrational is inferior. This is not so much due to its nature, but rather it's due to the fact that Western civilization has developed many tools and different means and facilities to deal with rational things. Even the boundaries of what is rational, or boundaries of approaches to what is rational, are found and proved using a rational approach. Also, consider hundreds of years of hard work of great scientists that is easily available. And just imagine the years of life spent learning to use it. What about such a fundamental thing as the spreading of knowledge? You can transfer and verify rational knowledge from one person to another without any dependencies, without being dependent upon this person who's sending it or the person who's receiving it. Okay, maybe 99%. But, for example, how can you send an impression of music without a dependency on the sender and the receiver? Another good example. Sometimes a joke may be understood as an insult. So it is still very uncomfortable to deal with the irrational. And he says, I wait for it to become more comfortable. And here's his last note. Although all great scientific discoveries were due to irrational processes, we can easily forget this fact and use only the rational part of such discoveries. So I thought that was a very interesting comment from a rather scientific mind. And I have here questions from Kamala Mullis Flat. This is a really interesting one. They're asking from over there about Radhakunda, that there are many polluted things people are putting in that water. So can we still consider it pure? I suppose you could also ask the same question about the Ganga or any sacred river. What was most interesting about the Ganges is that ships would use it as water on their boats, because the amazing structure of it is it would decompose very slowly. So therefore it could be stored for enormous lengths of time on ships. Now, Radhakunda water doesn't have that characteristic. Now, if you think about Radhakunda, we're talking about a lake which was supposed to have existed at the time of Krishna and Radha. And then it got lost. Nobody knew where it was. It kind of dried up, went away. People lost track of it. Now, that's a very interesting point. This place was lost. Now, the reason it became known again is because Lord Chaitanya went there, and there was a small puddle in a field of a farmer, a little puddle of water. So Lord Chaitanya started digging it out with his hands, and he said, this is the site of Radhakunda. So, I mean, ultimately, we're not really dealing with original Radhakunda, probably. We are dealing with Lord Chaitanya's transformation of that puddle of water in that place. Now, Radhakunda itself, I mean, when I first went there in the early 70s, I remember, it was rather not well taken care of. People were just diving in it, using it for all kinds of things. So some of the Babaji's who lived there were taking up collection and making a campaign to clean up Radhakunda, especially in the sense of purifying the water, because it doesn't have that natural characteristic of purifying the water. So they were consciously trying to purify it. Now, we can understand, using this understanding of healing water, rather that we are healing the water with our intentions. If somebody is sitting next to that body of water and considering it to be the ultimate spiritual location on this planet, they are intending it to be so. They are visualizing it as so. So they are, in essence, blessing that water with their intention. So therefore, it is becoming so. So the question was, how does the water deal with the dirty things? But the water, any water, requires conscious assistance for cleansing dirty things. Because water remembers all that took place. Therefore, water requires to be healed. And that's why also in the Vedic literature, it is stated that when saintly persons go to holy places and bathe there, they purify the holy place. Because it's their mentality, it's their consciousness, it's their love that heals the water. And because of that particular intention of that water being so pure, that water being so significant, not only for themselves, which they believe totally and fully, and not only just because it's in a tradition, in some book, but because everybody depends on it that way. So that hugely powerful intent of certain very hugely powerful personalities causes that water to be purified. Now, let's think about another very interesting Vedic fact. Because the Vedic literature, the Hindus, put a lot of importance on water. Even there is in the Catholic Church, I know, holy water by the front of the, by the back of the church. There's always a little bowl of holy water that when you walk into the church, you put that on your head. Now, that holy water becomes holy water because the priests bless it. And then they put this blessed water there for everybody to take. Everywhere in the Vedic literature, we find the importance, and in the different forms of instructions on how to do things, you find the importance of water. Like before you're even about to do anything, you first take a bath. The first thing you should do is take a bath in the sacred river. If you don't have a sacred river, at least take a bath. Then you have some water in a cup and you pour it, you sip it. But actually that water becomes empowered water by mantra. First you have to install the Achaman cup. You have to, what you do actually is either you take some of the original Ganges water from the original Ganges. Of course, I use the word original loosely, but you know what I mean. And you put it in, or, because, actually, it is stated, whatever Ganges water touches, the whole thing becomes Ganges water. Because the Ganges water has that power to expand and transform the structure of the water. At least that's what everybody says. But what's even more interesting you'll find in Vedic literature is things like installing Ganga water in the Achaman cup with a certain mantras. You bless the water to become Ganga water. Now, I know there are people who just simply chant a mantra and expect the mantra has transformed the water. And in most cases, that water is basically the same. But when somebody who has that mantra is aware of what they are doing with that mantra and intends that mantra to carry their energy of blessing that water to be Ganga water, it will be so. Okay, maybe not Ganga water, but it'll have the same structure, which is all that counts. You will see this is the main problem that most people have who don't know what they're doing, who with the mind can, quote, can perform functions, can do procedures, and who can chant mantras, but who don't have that intention behind it, don't have, they're not absorbed in the mood. They're not absorbed in the actual purpose, the whole point of the mantra, the whole purpose of the ceremony. They're not one with it. And therefore, the effect is not there. Whereas if you take these ceremonies or procedures or whatever, but you do it with full consciousness, with the understanding of your energy, understanding of the energy you are tuning to with this ceremony, it becomes fantastically powerful. Just as your water element within you tunes to the water element of the water you wish to bless. So ultimately what's happening is that the mantra and the procedure is tuning your water to tune that water. Just as you may take mantras and tantras and yantras to tune your fire to the sacrificial fire. So it's a question of sharing the elemental vibration with intention. This is the whole secret of spirituality, of the way in which spirituality relates to the world around us. This is also the way, by the way, shamanic energy is transmitted, by tuning to the ingredients of life and the world around us with certain intentions, by being in the mood of that thing. So this tuning of the water is even there in throughout the whole Vedic literature. But people didn't think of it as being so important. Just think of this point on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when Ashwatthama wanted to release the Brahmastra against Maharaj Parikshit. He placed himself within this atmosphere, this ambiance of the Brahmastra, and touched water. Now people, they just take that point and they just kind of let it slide by, because touched water, yeah, well, he did some achman or threw something. No way. It was that water which transmitted everything. I mean, even if you think about it, the air is filled with water vapor. When there's no water vapor in the air, everything dies. Becomes the most incredible drought. There's got to be some humidity. Because after all, if there's heat and there's water, there'll be evaporation. Evaporation will cause humidity. But if there's no water, there's no evaporation. So nothing can live. So there's always water vapor. Otherwise there can be no life. And that water vapor in the air is also a way to transmit in the air by connecting to water. You could make a whole science, a whole spiritual, mystical science around that concept of water. In any case, this is how healing water develops. There is, like, for example, Lourdes. I don't know if you've ever heard of Lourdes. It's a Lourdes in France. It's a place where healing with angels and a vision of the Virgin Mary has taken place in a water that just falls down a side of a mountain. It's a healing place where water falls down the side of the mountain, and there have been miraculous cures in that water. And I would propose that when there are a lot of people who are placing their energy into the healing of the water, to intend that water to become medicinal, it becomes so. That is why, like healers like João de Deus, the João of God, who's a Brazilian healer, he's always surrounded by many people who are placing good energy into the atmosphere that is used as part of the healing process. So, I suppose that's the answer to that question. Well, at least that's my answer. I don't know if it's the answer. It's what I could say about it. I could probably say more, but I'm going to move on to the next question. Why is Ganesh drinking milk in the videos where the deities are drinking milk and not water? Why is Ganesh? Did you ever see on the Harry Media video webpage? Did you ever go there, Sudo? If you go to Harry Media video webpage, you will see there's videos of a milk miracle. It's where Ganesh is drinking milk in the temple. So, why not water? Why milk? Well, if you think about milk, milk is mainly water. Milk is mainly water. I mean, why milk and not water? I think because many people feel that milk is a much more special substance to offer rather than water, which is a common substance to offer. And also, if you think about it, the water in the milk in a cow would be transformed by that peacefulness and nourishing mood of the cow as it made milk for its calves. So the water within the milk would be transformed by the love and nourishment of the cow for its calf. Now, of course, let's talk about cows and milk. It's an interesting fact that in Japanese culture, there were few problems before, I suppose, World War II. In certain kinds of diseases, I don't want to be specific because I don't want to get medically in trouble, but I just read a paper that certain very significant diseases that are affecting everybody today were absent in Japanese culture until the Japanese started drinking cow's milk, eating cheese, and all other dairy products. They didn't do that before. That was not known. But after that, these diseases started increasing. Now that's why a lot of people who deal with cancer or other diseases, you know, in the alternative circuit, they first say give up dairy. I used to have a problem in my ear all the time. I mean, it was like blown up constantly. And I went on the radio and talked to one of these radio doctors. And he told me, give up dairy for at least some time and see how it goes. And my ear problem went away. And since I had that ear problem for 7 years, I decided, well, I don't need dairy. So I thought better to become, you know, freed from this dairy jazz. Actually, it's fairly good. Now, people who are into Vedic things would say, but that's not right. Cows are here meant to give us milk and so on. And I don't really want to argue with that. If you think about it, we're talking about a tradition that came from a time and a culture where the cows were worshipped, where the cows were supported, where the calves actually drank the mother's milk. So we can understand all the intentions of all the farmers, the intentions of the people, the intentions of the pujaris to offer it to the deities, was surrounded by a lot of love for cows. And therefore the milk was very much empowered. The water in the milk, too, was very much empowered by everybody's feeling and intention. So naturally, we do not have these disease problems in those cultures in the past, because the cow and the dairy was in tune with the people, with their spirituality. It is an integral part of the people and their spirituality. But now we're in a totally 100% different situation. We have cows who exist as machines to produce milk, who have no relationship to calves, who are inseminated rapidly to keep the milk production going, and who are killed in a horrifying fashion for meat. These cows are filled with hormones, are fed things filled with pesticides and herbicides. They are shot full of antibiotics. The areas within which the cows are taken care of are often filled with unnatural forms of bacteria. And all of this is remembered in the milk, not only as the water's memory, but the actual composition of the milk is filled with these things. Okay, nowadays you've got organic milk. And there's such a demand for that in America, they cannot produce enough. Yet still, something has transformed. Because these cows are still a business. And there is no love involved with it. They are just fed clean grass and not given hormones or antibiotics. It hasn't really changed the relationship of man and cow. It's simply changed how man makes money with cow. Now, in a cleaner way. And those cows are also killed because even organic farmers need to sell them for organic meat and make organic money. So there is, I feel, a direct correlation between the way the cows are dealt with and the way in which milk ends up somehow or another being contradictory to our health. Now, the milk industry will contradict this totally. Various medical doctors will say various things. I'm just talking from the point of view of the vibrational transformation of these ingredients. And I think Ganesh drinking milk is a good way to display the importance of that element when it's properly taken care of. It's a good health thing when it's properly there. Otherwise, not. Now, people were very healthy in the time of Krishna and so on. You don't find major diseases. And they had enormous amounts of their diet were dairy. Yet now it causes disease. And I am personally convinced this is not the fault of the dairy. This is the fault of the world and its understanding of dairy and the way in which the dairy absorbs all that which is bad. Animals in general are very sensitive to the emotions around them. They immediately pick up on it. Animals are incredibly sensitive beings. Anyway, that's my two cents about Ganesh. What can I say about the specific characteristics of other substances like fire, earth, and ether? Well, ether we've talked about all the time. Ether is that thing which carries. So, that we're very familiar with. I'm not ready to talk about fire or earth. This thing with water kind of just hit me the other day. I don't think fire or earth are as significant as water, personally. Of course, they're all important. But I think water has a very specific significance which transcends any other element. I don't see a reason to get into fire and earth. I mean, I suppose at some point in the future, boom, it'll hit me to speak about that too. But right now, I would only say mundane things about fire and earth. Although it's interesting, now that I think about it, you know, I do healing things. So one of the things that I always do is that when I take away negative energies, I always burn them up because I don't want to dump them on the earth. So I burn with fire. So therefore I see that the fire is very purifying It burns. It transforms that which is impure to that which is pure. Of course, it does other things too. So I'll just leave it at that because I'm not sure I could talk much more or even better about it. Here, Harshi's asking me, when one is listening to what I'm talking about, one gets the impression that it's superior to listen to one's inner voice than to listen to the acquired knowledge from the generations before us. I'm not sure I gave that. Well, maybe I gave the impression, but I wouldn't say that. Not that way. I would say it differently. But then he goes on to ask, how to differentiate which information is worth listening to and which is not. Well, first of all, let me go back to the first thing. I would never say that it's superior to listen to one's own voice, inner voice, than to listen to the information or the acquired knowledge from the past. Because I don't think these are equivalent. It's not like you have two equivalent things and you have to choose between them. It's completely different. It's not even apples and oranges. It's actually dependencies. These are dependencies. In other words, my inner voice, of course, then we have to define inner voice, but I will do that. My inner voice is dependent upon all voices that have existed, that exist now. In other words, I am a product to a large extent of all that is, including all that is there in the ether, all that is there as knowledge. So I am dependent, or rather, my existence is based on a dependency to that which has come before. I am not independent. I am not original. I am not independently capable of creation. I am someone who is based in a dependency on all that was there before. However, now when we're going to define inner voice, well, inner voice can mean many things to many people. It could mean that which is in your mind. It could mean that which your conscience speaks about. Some people might want to start using the word super soul. Some people might want to start speaking about angelic communication. Some people might just want to say the way I have a conscience as a person that I shall do what's right. I would not use inner voice in that respect. I would say the heart. What the heart says. Obviously, we're talking about the essence. What I, as a spiritual being, feel. Feel in the sense of not feeling like happy or sad or cold or hot, but feel in the sense of this all cognitive knowing that I am connected to. And that is also dependent, or is also a product of all that has been there before. It's part of this huge evolutionary process we are all going through, for there is only one of us going through it, with many detailed aspects making up that whole. So I would never make the statement that my inner voice is more important than acquired data from the past, because I wouldn't even call it data from the past. I would call it that experience of the past. Okay, now I have unfairly twisted the questioner's definitions of the questioner's terms to make a point. So let's take it in the more obvious sense. So, data. We have information. I mean, after all, I talked about water. Most of this information about water I got off of a a movie I saw yesterday, which was made by scientists. And I'm quoting a lot of scientific data that I didn't know. I mean, of course, I remember in school about water being in the three states, but I forgot about it being the only substance. And this thing about the brain and water, it only started making sense to me in a healing sense because I do some healing things. And because I had some experience with healing some water yesterday. So my expression of my understanding, in other words, my understanding itself, was totally dependent on data I got from people who got data from the past. So I would never say it's not that important, this data, as compared to me. I would say we have a symbiotic, necessary interdependency where one feeds the other. Hey, don't forget, what I just said is being recorded. It's going to appear in a data bank of lectures on harrymedia.net. I am contributing to data. So if I were to say it's not important, that would be kind of stupid. Or if I were to only say only my data is important, nobody else's. Or my data is more important. It's completely a shall we say, misrepresentation of what's really going on in reality. It's all important. I may use the word important in the sense that I thought this was a very important point. Now, actually, I didn't think that way. I never think, oh, this is a very important point. Actually, I just think about it. I talk about it. I'm into it. And by my doing that, I am actually declaring this is an important point. And when I'm talking to you, I'm simply remembering that I did that, and I'm using words by saying, I thought this was important. But while I was thinking about it, I really didn't think it was important. I just got into it. So therefore, it's not like I have to differentiate what's worth being absorbed in and not. I simply have to follow my inclinations to be absorbed in something or not. And that which I'm absorbed in is important to me. I hope that answered that question. Or at least it brought you to other ways of seeing it that are important to you. Okay, here's another question. The question is, how do you really offer love and thanks to water? Because it's seemingly an impersonal substance, or rather a substance which is just like any other substance, which the questioner knows it's not. But if you think about it, water, earth, fire, you flush your toilet with water. Obviously, you don't respect it. You wouldn't flush your video camera. So in one sense, you respect your video camera more than the water. Interesting, but not relevant. Water becomes important when you understand it's important, when you have an intention of its importance. So we have gone through many lectures and many descriptions on how energy is transferred from us to others, or how we can perceive energy. But just to review for those who may be unfamiliar with it, first of all, If you understand water has the capacity to receive your energy, if you understand that, then you can actually proceed to transfer that energy. If you don't understand it, and you just accept it because, for example, somebody said so, and you try to offer your love to water, you won't be able to do it because you're not really into it. You're just doing because somebody said this is how you do it, yet you don't have any connection to it other than you're just doing what somebody said because you don't really understand it as being not only possible, but what is. That is the whole difference between doing things mystically and not. That is the whole difference between success and spirituality and not. That's why it is stated faith is so important. But I think this word faith is completely the wrong word in English. Rather, I would call it a conviction born of realization, which has become the reality of your experience. You can't call that a word like faith, because faith means something very different to all people. Yet, when one is actually living within an experience, the power is there in all levels. When one just believes in it, even when one believes in it very much, you can do, perhaps, something with that belief. You can even, as a faith healer would do it, change your life and heal horrible diseases. So, you could have a transformation, but it would not be part of your life. It would be a momentary transformation. You wouldn't be able to do that miracle every moment because the belief would be focused on a particular thing you were believing. I don't want to get into a whole discussion of that. That's another subject. But when it comes to blessing water, it's something you embrace. Now, you can't embrace the water if you don't understand the water. So you meditate on water as being the very basis of your whole existence. We're going to do this in the meditation. First, we're going to bless and thank and feel so grateful to all the water in our own body. I just did that in the break, and it was so cool. It was like all the water in my body was just tingling. Everything was tingling everywhere. It was just so cool, as the water was instantly responding to my meditation. I then tried to do a meditation on blessing bodies of water. Oh, that didn't work at all. I tried to do the thing of a distance healing on somebody I knew with their water. That didn't work at all. I began to understand this is something very personal. It's something that you do with the water in your own body. You can do it with the water of somebody with you. You can do it with the glass of water in front of you. Water is personal. It wants you to be there with it. It's like a very personal substance. In the question you say, it seems kind of impersonal, but actually it's the most personal substance. Ether, I can send stuff all over the universe in the ether. Just shoot it out there. But with the water, I've got to be there with the water. I can't even call the water on the phone. I can talk to somebody etherically on the phone, but the water, it's got to be there. So it's a very personal substance. That's kind of really fascinating when you think about it. So, how do you offer love and thanks to water? Well, let's talk about doing it to a glass of water. Or let's say you have a container of water. You can just put your hands. Now, of course, you have to know about feeling energy with your hands. And those of you who have been with us for a while, you know how to do this. Like if you were to put your hands as they come closer together, you will feel the energy of the other hand. It will feel like an energy ball. You could actually feel it like an energy ball. And that ball can become very, shall we say, real. And you can feel it very as having great density, like an energy ball. So this feeling through the hands, it's the sensitivity in the hands. Now, you can also feel other people's energy like that. And you can also project energy through your hands. By visualizing, and you can just, first of all, hold your hands out by your sides and just feel your hands. Simply feel them. Feel them as they become sensitive. You feel your hands and you just become very aware of your hands. And after doing this for some time, your hands become very tingly. They become filled with the power of sensation because you're feeling them. And then you can also project with those hands or feel other people's energy or feel where something's wrong or where something's right. And you can project energy from those hands by your will, by receiving energy from above, perhaps through the crown chakra, through your open palm in the left, and putting out through the right hand some healing color, some beautiful white healing color or other colors if you're trained, or good energy, just loving energy. And with that glass of water, you would just hold your hands, not touching the glass, because you're not doing this to the glass, you're doing it to the water. You hold your hands around that water and you just bless that water by saying, thank you, thank you, thank you for being there. Thank you for being the foundation of my life. Thank you for your nourishment. And just offering love to that most fundamental of all things that is the basis of all life. Offer healing and purification. And the water instantly responds. So that's how you do it. That's also the basis of healing. Everybody can be a healer in that way. In our meditation, we'll do it for ourselves. Oh, I just heard that the Russian video about water was shown on Russian Central TV one year ago and made a huge resonance amongst the people. That would make sense because Russian people or anybody living there are very ultimately mystical. I mean, ultimately, deep down, all of you people over there in Russia are mystics. Deep down. You just forgot. Some of you just forgot it, but it's really so.